My name is Obi Anthony, and I spent 17 years in the state of California for a crime in which I did not commit.
You're listening to Actual Innocence, a podcast spreading awareness of wrongful convictions and issues with the justice system. I'm Brooke, and I'm here with my co-host, DeMarco. How are you doing this week, sir?
I'm doing fabulous, and that's mainly because me and you have a project. And the project is you helping me with learning my laptop. I'm having fun learning my laptop, and other than that, I have my clothing line about to drop real soon, so everything is good.
And DeMarco's clothing line will be on our website. So if you're interested in that, you can stop by and take a look.
And you know what else I've been doing, Brooke?
What's that?
I've been reaching out to some celebrities, NBA celebrities, NBA basketball players.
Yeah.
I wrote like 8 different players, LeBron, Russell Westbrook, Carmelo, all these different celebrities. Because, you know, I always wanted to go to the Celebrity All-Star Game. And I reached out to them and asked them what they helped bring me there.
That would be amazing.
It would be.
So I need to tell our listeners that this month there is only going to be 2 episodes of Actual Innocence because DeMarco and I are working on a project and I feel confident that you're going to like it. But this week we interviewed Mr. Obi Anthony, and he was one of the people that I talked to way back when Actual Innocence first started. And we don't talk about his entire story in this episode, but you can hear it by going back to season 1, episode 11. And also pay attention to how far the podcast has come since that time.
Let's talk about our first sponsor, Havenly, and then we can do some trivia.
I just moved to a larger space in December, and it didn't feel quite like home until I was unpacked and everything had a place, including the decorations. With extra space comes extra decorating responsibility, and to be honest, I just didn't have the bandwidth to do it on my own. The thought of trying to stay within my budget by ordering from a multitude of different companies felt exhausting. Luckily, I discovered Havenly, and I was able to partner with an interior designer as a guide. We all need a little help making our space feel like home. Using my budget as a guide, Havenly helped me every step of the way to design my perfect room. Everyone deserves a beautiful living space. You can start by taking the free Havenly style quiz. It's a fun way to learn your unique design style and match you with the right designer.
Turn your Pinterest board into reality. Try Havenly today by visiting havenly.com/actual and get 25% off your design package. That's Havenly, Havenly.com/actual for 25% off your design package. Havenly.com/actual.
Havenly.com/actual. This week, I have brought back the trivia, and the questions are kind of a mix. Are you ready?
Yes.
Okay. The first one is multiple choice. According to the Exonerated Nation website, what is the average sentence time served by people who are wrongly convicted and then exonerated? A, 8.2 years, B, 10.8 years, C, 13.6 years, or D, 15 years?
It's C.
It is C.
That's such a long time. We have got to do better.
We do. I agree. Okay. So the second question isn't multiple choice, but I put a pretty good hint in there. So as of October 2017, this state, so the answer I'm looking for is the name of a state. This state has exonerated 190 people from wrongful imprisonment just on its own. One of those exonerees is Kimberly Long.
California.
Ding, 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 ding. Good job. If you have Twitter, I'm sure the California Innocence Project would appreciate some extra retweets. The California Innocence Project itself is on Twitter with a username @CA_innocence. Okay. Do you want to tell the listeners about today's interview?
Yes, I do. Now, I met Obi in San Diego last year, and I really got to hang out with Obi and spend some time with him. And, you know, his mind, the way his mind work, whoo.
Yeah.
I don't understand it, but, you know, he's doing a lot of positive things. And the stuff that he was explaining to me and, you know, letting me know to be aware of this. And he gave me a lot of helpful advice, and I really appreciate him. But, you know, I've kept in touch with him since then. And here's Obi Anthony, y'all.
So I was incarcerated in 2 prisons in the state of California. One, my first 10 years, I was held at Corcoran State Prison in the Central Valley of California. And then my last 7 years of my wrongful conviction, I was at Calipatria State Prison down at the southern part of California.
And what was your age when you went in?
I was 19 when I went in, and I was 37 when I came home.
Wow. And what were you convicted of?
I was convicted of a murder and two attempted murders with three attempted robberies with special circumstances, and was sentenced to the term of life without the possibility of parole plus 50 years.
Did you say life without parole?
Yeah, life without the without parole. Initially, it was a death penalty case. They dropped the death penalty, and I got sentenced to life without plus 50 years.
But listen, how they going to give you a life without parole and 50 years? You can't even make parole on a life without. Then they going to give you 50 years.
Yeah, no one ever understands what they do, man.
We have talked about a lot of different factors that have led up to someone's wrongful conviction, like false confession or prosecutorial misconduct. What do you think were the main factors that led to your wrongful conviction?
The main factors that led to my wrongful conviction was identification, prosecutorial misconduct, and ineffective assistance of counsel. They really had no reliable identification in my case at no point. They utilized an informant as a witness and called him a witness and fed him information and called him out as a witness. The prosecutor overstepped his bounds a couple of different times, never did correct the misinformation which he knew that his witness was given while on stand, and the prosecutor also withheld evidence from the defense. On the defense side, my public defender failed to do any type of proper investigation. And so the three things that affected my case was identification, prosecutorial misconduct, official misconduct, and ineffective assistance of counsel.
What were the factors that led to your exoneration? Was there a group that helped you, or did you find your own attorney? How did that work?
The factors that led to my exoneration was I had reached out to the Northern California Innocent Project. And in 2008, they received a letter from me indicating that I was a co-defendant of a young man by the name of Reggie Cole, who had been incarcerated for the same crime in which I was incarcerated for, and that he had been exonerated. And I gave them some of the factors in regards to that. They began to start looking into my case. They took the case. They worked on my case for 3.5, almost 4 years. And in 2011, I went down to the county jail in August of 2011 and had an evidentiary hearing in Compton Court, where I was exonerated in September of that year, 2011.
What I want to ask you about is, what have you been doing? What have you been doing since you've been out?
A lot of positive things. I can vouch for it, but we'll let you speak on it.
I don't know, man. I always took my freedom as a power. Was a kid that liked the Spider-Man growing up, realizing it came with great power came great responsibility. My freedom gave me responsibility and power. And I couldn't sit around doing anything with those things. I became a little bit of antsy-pantsy because of all the positive energy that was in me. And so I began to start moving around. I did a couple of speaking engagements. I worked with Proposition 34 to remove the death penalty from the state of California, in which at that point, after that, I got involved with the ACLU on some other campaigns. Had a chance to go and advocate on a bill at the Capitol about prosecutorial misconduct and holding them accountable for withholding evidence against a person innocent, such as they did in my case.
How did that feel?
It felt great. The first time there, we wasn't successful, but we were able to get the bill all the way to the governor's desk. And the bill sat there on the governor's desk, and he finally vetoed it at the end of the year in December. And so we followed up with that bill the following year, a little bit more robust, and asked for them to hold it as a felony and give them time, 3 years in prison, 3 to 5 years in prison, and made it a little bit more detailed. And the following year, the bill made itself back to the governor's desk, and the governor passed that bill.
That
bill into law. And so now in the state of California, it's a felony now for prosecutors to hold with evidence against a person innocent. And so if they're found to be knowingly, willingly, and responsible for withholding that evidence, they can get charged and get penalized up to 3 to 5 years in prison.
So that's what's also called a Brady violation?
Yeah.
That's amazing.
And so that's one of the things. The other thing I'm really excited about is that also in the state of California, because of some of the work that I've been involved with, now there's an informational database that entraps all of the informants. And so they can no longer call a person a witness when they have been informant for the cops for many years, and they want to brush them in as a witness to a crime when they know well for sure that that person is an informant. They can no longer do that now. All of the informants is trapped inside of a data, got them and logged them in a database. And if that individual is ever used, then that person there would then be held accountable. Excuse me. I really have to take this. You guys don't have to
hang
up, but can I just have you hang up quick?
For sure.
I had to take that. That was some more stuff. That's which I can mention to you right here. We were talking about like some of the good things that I've been, you know, what I'm doing right now. And one of the things that I'm really excited about right now, that's like at the precipice for me, is that the Sierra Health Foundation.
Mm-hmm.
Has so gracefully given me the opportunity to hold the first Exoneree Hell Conference.
That's right, amazing.
Out here in the state of California. Wow. So I get a chance to call in other exoneree, invite other exonerees in from around the United States, and to bring them here to participate in the conference, and also, you know, food, room and board, all of that stuff included. You just got to get them out here. And get a chance to talk about some of the things that's the most important to exonerees. What's working good for where you or where you at, and what's not. What are some of the things that can we do that can be beneficial here in the state of California, and also what's some of the things that we can assist you guys with. And so it's just about bringing some exonerees together and to have a collective conversation among some stakeholders and other individual supporters that wants to be able to put us on a better track than what the state set us on. So
good for you.
I want to know when the conference is and am I invited?
Yeah, most definitely. You already know, bro. Right. So right now, I sent them over email earlier last week. But for whatever, you know, it's the Sierra Health Foundation and the president there, a young man named Chet Hewitt. You know, he swamped for emails, and apparently she couldn't find it. So I'm going to send it right over to his secretary so she can get it printed out to him and all of that. I'm looking at a couple of dates in April right now, one April 16th and the other April 19th. So I'll see when exactly with Sierra Health Foundation, which one of those fits well with them. And once they get back at me and let me know what dates fit well with them, and then I can begin to start setting out, getting out invitations and setting out an agenda and a program for the conference and start, you know, doing the necessary things I need to do to prepare for it. But right now I'm looking at 2 days. April 16th and the 19th.
So you had a civil rights suit, right? Like against Los Angeles?
No, I actually had three. So I actually had a civil rights suit against the city of Los Angeles. I also had the county of Los Angeles. And I also had one for my day for day. So it was actually three complaints that I had, one against the state, one against the city, and one against the county.
Can you tell us how they went?
And well, they all went great. I can't say they went great. I did prevail on all three, which is, you know, it's good, but it's unfortunate at the same time. I'm one of maybe a few or just a couple of individuals in the state of California that has achieved the trifecta, as they call it, which is, you know, win a civil complaint against the city, one against the county, and also one against the state. And which is a good, they did what they did, and they were supposed to do what they did. And even more so, what they did was nowhere near can ever make up for anything in my life that they took from me. But it was an acknowledgement from all three entities that they realized and understood that what they did was wrong and that they was in the wrong. And so, yes, I was able to, with the city complaint, I settled with the city of Los Angeles for $8.3 million. And also, I could have settled with the county for over $2.something million, but I told them, I said, I'll settle for way less than that. I told him I'll settle less than that. Actually, I told him I'll settle for 800,000 of that. Give me 800,000 if they would agree to create that database in which they created in this in Los Angeles to entrap the informant. And so, so they agreed. Bam, they begin the process to begin to start creating that to entrap those individuals that were that are informants in Los Angeles. And I settled with them for 800,000, and then with the state of California, my day for day, they did give me my $100 a day for my time in which they from the Victims Compensation Board.
That's fabulous. Congratulations. Was that tax free?
Well, yes. In the state of California, the civil complaint is yes. All wrongful conviction awards are tax free.
So I want to talk to you about Exonerated Nation, which is the nonprofit that you founded. Did you just wake up one day and was like, you know what, I need to do this? Or how did that get started?
No. So, man, amazingly. So my second conference that I, after I'm out, so I came home in 2011. I went to a conference in 2012. I was blown away. First conference I've been to, got a chance to meet some brothers from Texas, out of New York, from New Orleans, everywhere, Chicago. I was meeting brothers from everywhere. And I was really moved and by the actions that the brothers had taken down in Texas to acquire the compensation for all the other exonerees that come home after them. It made it possible for them to get $80,000 annuity, health care, education, and things like that. And I was like, wow, man, how did y'all do that? And they began to talk to me about some of the steps that they took, some of the sacrifices that they made, in other words, to accomplish their goal. And I was motivated and moved by it. And it was at that conference that we were having a conversation, and the conversation was about exactly, you know, what's going on in these states, like what's happening over here in this state and what's happening in that state. And it was at that time that I had to interject that, you know, we can't continue to do what they did to us, separate us from our family. And now that we're home, you guys are trying to separate us from our new family that we have now become part of by calling us, you know, exoneree from the state of Chicago and exoneree from the state of New York or California or wherever they may be from. And I told them there, I said, we are an exonerated nation. We won. We're not part of the society that we have been dropped into. We wasn't this prison that y'all dropped us into. And now we back out. Now we out here in this free world in the states that has so wrongfully done us, that did us so wrong, has turned their back on us and created this sort of pocket of individuals that everyone is ignoring. They pay attention to the homeless population, the returning citizens, the veterans. However, when it comes to the innocent people who they have put in prison, they do nothing. They say nothing. They do not apologize. They make no efforts, in other words, to make their lives whole or right, any of those things. And again, getting back to the point, like I said, my freedom gave me a responsibility and the power. I could not, you know, that was me when I was in the penitentiary. I wasn't the guy that listened to people complain about stuff. I put it on paper, made a class action complaint about it, had everybody sign it. You don't have to do it. I'll write it up. You sign it. And so that's all, you know, that's always kind of been the kind of individual I am, that, you know, I won't sit around and listen to the complaint. I'd rather move on the complaint. And that was the complaint of all of the exonerees, that we come home to nothing. When we walk out of the door, absent the fact that we have family support that was still there, we'll be homeless, fending for ourselves out. If the Innocent Projects only got us out and then finished getting other people out, what do we do? Where do we go? How do we survive? People will be missing from, been taken from 25 years, 22 years, 30 years. And people die and move on. And from those communities, from that environment where we at, we were at. So what do we do? What do those individuals do? What do we do when we come home? Well, I don't need them to be trying to answer that question. You know, my thing is, I've been out long enough to answer the question. And I should have an answer for y'all at this point, but I'm still working on it. But these are the things here that I have answered. So for me, it's about everybody else. And I tell everybody all of the time, I'm all right. I cannot do nothing but walk away and just go sit down and, you know, face my dogs. Yeah, and just mess with my dogs and not and deal with my PTSD, how I'm suffering every day. I feel worthless and useless and like void. So keeps me busy.
Are you hiring? Do you know where to post your job to find the best candidates? ZipRecruiter posts your job to over 100 of the web's leading job boards with just one click. Then, ZipRecruiter actively look for the most qualified candidate and invite them to apply. They even review every application to identify the top candidates, so you never miss a great match. That's why ZipRecruiter is different. Unlike other hiring sites, ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on the right candidates finding you. It finds them. No wonder 80% of employees who post on ZipRecruiter get a qualified candidate through the site in just one day. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire.
Find out today why ZipRecruiter has been used by businesses of all sizes and industries to find the most qualified job candidates with immediate results. And right now, our listeners can post jobs on ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, free. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/actual.
That's ZipRecruiter.com/actual. One more time to try it for free. Go to ZipRecruiter.com/actual.
So I was reading the mission statement, which is powerful. Like I was creeping on your website, sorry. But it talks the organization's purpose is like to meet the needs of people who are exonerated. And so you talk about housing, which is obviously key because if you're homeless, it's so hard to get any other kind of service.
Yeah, correct. Right. So talking about houses, so realizing and understanding that when an individual comes home and he has nowhere to go, that's the first and foremost thing on his mind. It's not about finding a job, not about getting no medical. I got to find somewhere where I can lay my head. And at cost, whether he's getting into a hotel room, motel room, or finding low-income housing or an apartment, whatever it may be, all of those things cost. And so what does that mean for that guy who just spent 22 years in prison, who's walking out of the door? He can't reach into his pocket to pull out any motel money because they gave him no gate money. He can't reach into his pocket to get the money for no hotel or for no or low income housing because they haven't given him no money to do so. And so he's just there. So I realized that that's really, really important. And so I've been really pressed hard about trying to figure that out. I'm looking into tiny homes. It's my hopes right now. I got a little traction in regards to conversation about creating tiny home communities for exonerees. And that's in per state. You can have tiny home communities here in the state of California, some in the Midwest, some over here in this spot, so that when individuals come home and they have no place to go, they realize they have a small community of individuals that they know that suffer like them. They might not know them, but they know they're suffering. And so when they come home, they can come home to us, right? That's sort of that part of it, and not have to be with their head on the swivel all of the time, be concerned and stressed. They got their own little spot. They're in a community of other brothers and sisters who suffer like them, people who they can communicate with, learn different directions, where to go, how do I use this phone right here, man? I need to get to the messages. Those things are issues. It's more than just, I realize, yes, you're right. It's more than just housing. Realizing that's one of the first and most important things, though.
Yeah, absolutely. And then we talked about this a little bit ago about PTSD and like health services, including mental health, because if you can't wrap your brain around this trauma that you were sentenced to, then you're not going to be able to function in the world. So I saw that you also were talking about health services, including mental health, which I think is very important.
Yes, correct. And so again, that's one of the reasons for the conferences and the relationships that was established with the Sierra Health Foundation. And also with another university out in the state of California, TUC, Toro Health University. And because they realize and understand the public health situation. It's a public health situation. Our wrongful conviction was a public health situation. And so each of these institutions that deals with health realize that 85% of health is outside of the body. And so it's about dealing with those and understanding those factors and trying to tackle those things and how it applies to us as exonerees. Right now, just speaking on the PTSD aspect, realizing that's something that, in other words, that stays with us. It's not something that they can medicate out or in or talk out. Those things take time. This is so if I was in jail for 17 years, it's going to take at least 17 years to work that out. Realizing, understanding that and appreciating that it's about creating situations and programs so that you can give individual tools, necessary tools so that they can have for themselves. So when they buy themselves in the car or when they in the house or in the and they are on the work site or they in the conversation with somebody and they feeling that sort of that anxiousness, that anxiety that oftentimes arise from when we was in prison and we were getting in these conversations, you thinking it is getting heated, your anxiety, everything is really getting moving. And it's about understanding how to control that and realizing that we're not in that environment. These are not the same individuals that this moment here can be controlled and giving them the tools to do so. And so Exonerated Nation has set out to have holistic healing retreats annually. And we're making relationships with individuals like the Rockwell Leadership, Restorative Justice. In other words, to facilitate some of those necessary things for the person to have on their own, some of those necessary tools, working tools, so they can kind of, go for themselves, but move about amongst their family, friends, and associates in a little bit more kind of productive way within themselves. Sometimes, what happens with me is that I don't get frustrated, but I do get frustrated that, not that they don't understand where I'm coming from, but they just don't get it. And so it's like, man, you gotta get it. Like, I've been gone for all of this time, and you want to tell me what people are doing. And what I remember every time I turned on the TV, people was going crazy. They was getting divorced at a high rate. They was killing each other. They was doing all of this stuff. I'm kind of focused on what me right now and not people. And it's just that sort of kind of communicative thing that happens. Because most families only want to do is protect us when we first come out. They want to show us where to go. How, you want to get into this. You want to try this over there and over here and over this. And they tend to sort of forget that we're now grown men with our own set of type of things that we want to do. We've been in prison all of that time, waiting to get out. And we want to get out and be accomplished and do stuff. And it's just about controlling that moment right there. Because it can get explosive between family members and the exoneree. Because, again, them not understanding where I come from.
So my listeners are always asking, what can I do to help? What is it that we can do to help? Those of us on the outside, like, how can we, like, do you have, like, donations? Like, if they go to the website, like, what do you need?
Yeah. I mean, like, so what they can do now is, like, donate. But, I mean, and that's just not monetarily. I mean, donate your time. If you have money, donate your money. If you have, clothing that, you may have wore a couple of times, and now you got a whole slew of clothes. Exonerees come home with nothing. They have zero. They need to get new clothes. They need to get toothbrushes, deodorants. They need all of those things. And so donate all of those things. Those, we accept and need all of those, all of that. And we also accept time, your time, opportunity, in other words, to spread the word. To be part of Exonerated Nation, to be part of our mission, to help to remove the stigma from us as exonerees, being part of that incarcerated community and coming home. We also have a stigma on us, too, as well, because of our absence. Oftentimes they say, well, what did you do then? Or how do you know, was it a technicality that got you off? Or, it's always a question about, them doing me wrong. No, you should have questioned their wrong in the gate. I was innocent.
You should have never had to prove yourself innocent.
Yeah, I shouldn't have never had to do that, but I had to do that. And so now that I've proven myself, it just feels bad that now that you want me to redress that, like, why and how to you after the course. And, so it's a whole thing that happens, and it's a whole growing process for the exoneree, male and female, male or man and woman, excuse me. And so I'm just about attending to that stuff because I'm attending to me. And I know what it's affecting me. I know what's going on with me. And I have to take the position that whatever sort of tools that I come across that may be beneficial, I have to pass them along because it may not help this exoneree, but it may help the next exoneree. And so I just need to put it on the table. And so I got to go get the things to do that.
You are doing great things. You're helping people. You're an advocate. I'm so impressed right now. I vacuumed my floor today. Like, I think you probably done more today than I've done all week.
No.
You're doing a lot of positive things for real. And Exonerated Nation, I really love that. But for you to go through what you've been through, I love when I hear exoneree say that he's doing this and he's done that and, you know, all the positive things. Because there's a lot of people that never been to prison that's, you know, doing nothing. So for you to go through all that you've been through and get out and accomplish these and getting laws set, and man, that's huge.
Thank you, brother. Thank you. And I really appreciate that.
Yeah, for real. You're welcome.
Do you ever think about, wow, look at all these great things I'm doing? And I know most people don't think about their own great things, but do you ever think about what you would be doing had you not had the experience of being wrongly convicted?
I mean, yeah, I always think about that. I always think, like, where I'll be. But then I always catch myself at the back end of that because, you know, ultimately, my inner core of me tells me that my creator refined me during that time. In other words, and I said that to a pastor a while ago. I mean, like, when I was in there, he's like, because he didn't believe. He was like, I got life without the possibility of parole. I'm going to go to the penitentiary. And he was like, you just say that like it's nothing. And I was like, look, man, I don't know why I'm going to go to the penitentiary. I know I didn't do it. The creator know I didn't do it. And so that means then, that for whatever reason, I'm going to go to the penitentiary, whether it's to stop something, be part of something, I don't know. But whenever that is over and done, and the creator sees fit for me to come home, he'll make a way for those things to happen. And boom, bam, bing, here I am, I'm home. And he refined me, and I'm shining, and I'm out here to do his work. It's his work that I'm doing. It's not my work. It's not my work. It's his work. It's not mine. It's not mine at all. I'm not, again, you say, what I'll be doing, I'll be doing nothing. I don't know. But right now, I know I'm doing work.
Because this wouldn't have been on your radar. Do you know what I mean? Like you would be like me, you know?
Right. And exactly. In 1994, there were wrongful convictions in 1994. People was getting exonerated back then. But again, it wasn't on my radar. I wasn't aware because, again, that whole thing about if it don't hit you, you don't know. And if it's not in your circle, then somehow or another it can't affect your circle. And so because of those, I was unaware of all any of those things. But now, again, your awareness creates a totally different individual. Well, in some, right? You can become aware of stuff and then ignore it, or you can become aware of things and then try to change those things. And that's what happened with me. I became aware of the things, and I just decided to change it. The brother has said something about a lot of, because it's not a reason to come home. That, you know, I just want to be out. I don't want to be associated with that stuff. I don't want to be associated with the, like, me calling that. I don't want to be part. I just want to just be free and find myself some healing. And you have to respect and appreciate that. And I do all of the time.
Yeah. So if someone comes to Exonerated Nation, what advice do you have them? What's the first piece of advice you give to them to help them be more successful in life?
So, you know, so I'll tell you, so we have a brother named Xavion Johnson, who just came home maybe 45, 50 days ago, in exonerated California. And I had an opportunity, in other words, to be with him for not like the last week to talk to him about those things, some expectations, some things, not to expect people to be all that you thought they was going to be when you was in prison. So meaning this, like, because, you know, you anticipate you coming home, you anticipate getting out, you anticipate these things. And when it happens, you also kind of think about how people is going to react to those things happening. And so for me, it's about reminding an exoneree to be mindful of that and not lose control in there. And I tell them all of the time this, and I told him, and I tell every brother I come across and sister, listen, if you can't tolerate yourself and be patient with yourself, there is no way possible you can do that with anybody else. And you need patience and tolerance to be able to sustain, to grow yourself out here. Because the obstacles in front of us are not obstacles at all. They are opportunities, in other words, for us to be great. And if you go into a situation with perceiving it as an obstacle and not an opportunity, then you damage yourself from going from point A to point B to point C. Because you defeat yourself from the gate. So I try to remove that defeat of attitude. Only thing we did for so long So fight to get out, Every time, get denied. And then when we get exonerated, we still have to fight, right? Fight to get our innocence back, fight to get compensated. And I tell a person is this, that once all of the fighting is done, who are you and what you're going to do? And I talk to him about remembering you, your worth, know what you're going to do. No, and so don't get so caught up on the fight on the outside, but fight the fight on the inside so that you can realize your worth, your strength, your value, so you can see how those things radiate without in the world as you figure yourself out.
What's next for Obi Anthony?
I don't know, man. Right now, next level for me is that, you know, the Creator blessed, and obviously I'm successful in regards to establishing the programs for all exonerees. It's to take this, Exonerated Nation is a national organization, and so it is my goal to be successful here in the state of California to show work and an example and proof in the pudding, to then take these things, these programs, and then begin to start dropping them in different states.
How do you find Exonerated Nation? Like, if the listeners want to make a donation or donate their time or contact you, how should they do that?
So they can go on the website, go on and look us up, exoneratednation.org. We also have a Facebook page, Exonerated Nation. They can also go there. And we also have a Twitter too, as well, at Exonerated Nation.
At what point did you get your GED? Did you graduate high school?
No, I didn't. I went into prison reading, brother, at a fourth grade level. And I was very hesitant to do any of those, like to go take the GED, any of that. It wasn't until 2008, after I had been incarcerated for about 14 years. And I had a teacher. I was working as a teacher's aide. And I was helping other students out. And she was like, "Do you got your GED?" I was like, "No." She said, "Why didn't you take your GED?" I'm like, "I don't know." She's like, "Well, you should take your GED." And her name was Pekarik. She encouraged me to take the GED. I was scared. I didn't think I was going to pass it. And so I took it in 2008. I took the pre-test in 2008. Then I finally took the GED test in 2008, and I passed. And miraculously, I scored top 10 in the state. I didn't know. I was like, what?
And you know what? You obviously have life smarts. You have people smarts. Like, you have, like, the kind of education that comes from your experiences.
To go in prison and reading at a fourth grade level into where you was at then into where you're at now. Wow, man.
I don't know what it is. I always say this all of the time. Like, I don't know where I got this from. I can only tell you that it came from the Creator. That's it. Because I'm moving along the things. I'm doing His work. But He, in other words, helping the weak, helping those who can't help themselves, visiting the people in prison who don't got visits, who's not visiting them, taking care of those individuals who can't take care of themselves, who's having a hard time, who everyone else has turned their back on them, who said that they was disposable. Like they told me. They told me I was disposable and threw me away. Left me in there. I would have been still in prison. My actions and my efforts are to show that we are not disposable. And not only are we not disposable, but we will not be quiet either.
Every time I talk to Obi Anthony, I feel even more inspired. He is such a great guy.
He has so much going. That's what I love to see, you know, exonerees. I say this over and over, but for exoneree to be gone, you know, missing, taken out of society for so long and then put back into society and to overcome a lot of the obstacles that, you know, that goes on in our head, the issues, PTSD and a lot of these other issues that we haven't even been, you know, we don't even know that we have, basically. But took it out of society for decades and then placed back into society and overcome all that and still succeed, you know, that's huge. I like to see exonerees being successful out here.
Me too. And the fact that he said that he went into prison with a fourth grade reading level and now look at him, like, I think that that's incredible because I don't think there are necessarily a lot of opportunities in prison for one to improve himself. And I think he took it upon himself to make that happen.
And it's a lot of stuff, a lot of things in prison that, you know, can deter you from staying on the right path. So for one to take himself and sit down, take the time to learn this, educate himself, or have you learn, whether somebody showing you or you did it yourself, you know, to do that in prison, you know, you need to be commended, because a lot of people are going there and just waste away, basically. Like, well, I have this time, and they don't really, you know, focus on helping themselves. So I commend him.
So we'll be back in 2 weeks. Until next time, thank you so much for listening.